Welcome to the Side Hustle Project, a podcast where we explore the nitty-gritty details behind what it takes to start and grow a profitable side hustle. I'm your host, Ryan Robinson, and in this podcast, I'm bringing you interviews with entrepreneurs, best-selling authors, CEOs, investors, and people just like you who are building and profiting from interesting side hustles. In today's episode, we're talking to Darren Murph, the Guinness World Record holder for the title of World's Most Prolific Blogger, having authored over 17,202 individual blog posts during his seven-year tenure working for the tech publication Engadget here in the San Francisco Bay Area. Darren landed his job as a staff writer for Engadget shortly after graduating from college in 2006. Get this, from applying online. A few months after submitting his application, he got a call back, went through the interview process, landed the gig, and packed his bags for California. It was this time, working with some of the world's most respected tech journalists at Engadget, that Darren really built his writing muscle and developed a regular practice that helped him churn out literally hundreds of blog posts every month. Since leaving Engadget, Darren's gone on to teach writing and blogging classes at Creative Live, where we originally met. He's a published author of the book Living the Remote Dream, a guide to seeing the world, setting records, and advancing your career. Darren's worked with everyone from top consulting firms like McKinsey & Company to globally recognized brands like Citibank, Dolby, TechRadar, and where he's now a senior strategist and writer, The Points Guy. In this episode, Darren and I talk about how he's built a remote career and powerful personal brand for himself as a journalist and writer, regularly landing five- and six-figure jobs and consulting contracts with top companies. We dig into his own personal writing process and get into the fine details of how he prepares himself to write a high volume of quality content, whether for his own blog or for client projects. We cover what makes the perfect blog post, Darren's best advice for building a profitable business around your blog, monetizing your skills online, getting attention from the press, and so much more. As always, you can find everything we mentioned in today's episode in the show notes at ryrob.com/podcast. That's spelled ryrob.com/podcast. Let's get into today's incredible interview with Darren Murph.
Darren, welcome to the show.
Thanks, man. Good to be here.
I'm pumped to be chatting with you here today. And, you know, for everyone listening, watching, first things first, just to lay everything out on the table, Darren is currently the Guinness World Record holder for the title of Most Prolific Professional Blogger. And, you know, you earned that title during your time working for the tech publication Engadget, where you authored, tell me if this is correct, 17,212 individual blog posts over the course of 4 years. And doing the math, that's about 12 blog posts per hour. Is that correct?
It worked out to a post every 2 hours, 365 for four straight years.
Every 2 hours. Oh yeah. My gosh.
Yeah. And wow. That was, and the 17,000 was right. I continued to work there for many years after that. When I left, I think it was somewhere around 25,000. It kind of makes my head hurt to think about it, but it's up there. I'll take it. They sent me a plaque, which is pretty awesome, I'll say.
I love that. So first and foremost, I want to dig into a few different elements of this. But, you know, can you give us a little context, lay down some background, tell us, you know, what things were like at Engadget back in 2006 when you started there?
Yeah, it was a fascinating time. That's been about 12 years ago now, which in the tech space is like an eternity. If you dial back the clock of what has happened in the consumer technology landscape in 12 years, it's incredible. When I started there, the groundwork was laid for something like that to happen simply because it was right before the massive wave of technology is now intertwined with popular culture in every possible way. And because of that, we had an almost limitless amount of content and news that we could cover, and I was there to cover it. And we started as a really, really small team, so I ended up pulling a lot of rope to make it work. So the timing was really good for it. It helped that I was really passionate about the subject matter. It helped to be a part of an amazing team with good mentors. The timing was pretty good.
How did you originally land that job?
Yeah, I was at university. I was doing an undergrad business degree at NC State, and I was working in their digital library. And one evening, I was an avid Engadget reader. One evening, I just saw a post that said, hey, we're looking for contributing writers. And I thought, you know, maybe my nights and weekends could stand to have a little spice. So I applied. I mean, it was as simple as that. I was an avid engagement
reader. Just on the website.
Just on the website. I was an avid reader. I saw a post. They were looking for contributors. And I followed the instructions. I sent them 3 samples. I sent it to an email address. And to be honest, it went into a black hole. So I didn't hear anything. In fact, I finished school, graduated, moved 3 states away, took a supply chain job. And then 3 months into that job, got an email back and said, hey, we liked your samples. Could you send us a few more? It was crazy. And I remember canceling all my plans that weekend to like solely focus on those follow-ups.
Wow. Yeah, that's insane. So for some more context for everyone today, Darren and I originally met when he came through Creative Live, taught a class on the topic of how to write blog content. Another class also on how to work remotely and thrive working from home. So for all of our different bloggers, writers, marketers out there who are still kind of forming their writing muscle, Darren, what's your advice for starting down the long path to becoming a skilled writer?
It's a combination of things. One thing you really have to have is patience. It, like anything in life, it doesn't happen overnight. If you see an amazing sports star, you can bet that it didn't happen overnight. There was a lot of sacrifice, a lot of practice, a lot of patience to craft that. And the same goes with writing an editorial. The other thing, which I think a lot of people overlook the importance of, is reading. And so when I say it from the standpoint of you are what you read, it starts to make more sense to people. And so what I mean by that is really dig in and invest time each day in reading authors and publications that you really respect, that really make you think, that really get your juices flowing, that really keep your interest throughout a whole piece, because you will, by osmosis, soak some of that in. And some of the subtle editorial craftsmanship that you appreciate when you read, you will pick up on it and it will start to flow back out in your own writing. And this goes back to the patience thing. You can't read everything that was ever written in the course of a day or 2 days or a week or even a month. It's going to take a long time. People are producing content every single day. You're going to discover something new that you like every single day. Stick with it. The more you read, the better writer you tend to become. And to give you some perspective on that, when I was training up new editors at Engadget who had never written professionally before, so we're talking about trying to go from 0 to 100, it would usually take about 18 to 24 months before they and I felt fully, fully confident that whatever they were producing was the best possible piece on the internet about that given topic on that given day. It took a lot of time, of mentorship, of edits, a lot of time. But if you're committed to it, that time can kind of fly by. And much like riding a bike, once you've got it, you've got it. And you don't really lose it if you keep practice.
Yeah. And I know it's easy to say, you know, the more you write, the more you read, the faster you're going to progress. But in your mind, is there anything as such as kind of like a magic number of articles that people who are relatively new to writing, to blogging, should try and aim for publishing, or, you know, some sort of like magic word count they should try and aim for publishing every week, month, year, any intervals that you kind of have in mind?
I think it depends on who your audience is in the construct that you're working in. And what I mean by that is when I was working at Engadget, we were a breaking news organization. So sometimes we would have 50 to 60 articles a day going up, but that's completely the wrong cadence for maybe a site that focuses on awesome recipes. Once a week is probably enough or something like that. It totally depends on your audience and what you're going after. I will say though, one piece of anecdotal advice on that is there's a gentleman named Tynan, T-Y-N-A-N. His website is tynan.com. It's a blog. He got into writing and blogging in some ways as a challenge. He had a buddy of his that made a bet with him that he couldn't write a blog post every single day for 365, for a full year. And the stakes were really high. If I'm remembering correctly, it was like over $10,000 that was like legitimately wagered on this. And he was like, there's no way I'm losing that. And so he actually did it and he accomplished it. And I remember him saying at the end of it, when he was sort of looking back at what he learned, he just felt like a monumentally better writer at the end of that year than he did at the beginning. And this was under a pressure cooker type of situation. It was a challenge. And so it amounted to one post a day. So he wrote 365 things, which in some ways can sound like a lot, but in others, probably not so much. If you ask any decent athlete how many hours of batting practice they've had, it's probably more than 365. So it's one of those things that you just got to put it in perspective of. It's take it day by day. It's not, don't try to bite it all off at once. But I've seen people improve if they just stick with it and build a cadence.
Yeah. And I mean, just to add on to that real quick, like something that I've done to kind of take the stress of publishing, say every day or every week away from the equation is that I just have to write every day. And not necessarily publish something brand new, right? Because then you get into like, oh, the headline needs to be perfect. The images have to be all aligned perfectly, formatting, all these little things. And so I use kind of just the simple, like open up a Google Doc and write. Doesn't have to be a finished piece.
Yeah, you don't have to publish everything you write. And he actually wrote more than the 365 that he published. Just some of them didn't quite make the cut. But he learned a lot, even in those throwaways.
How important is your environment to you? You know, from like everything, where's Sam in your house? Is there a window nearby? Do you have to have certain things on your desk in order to feel like you're in a good mental space for writing? Is this something that you think much about?
Yeah, early on, it was a deal. As you get confident in your writing, and I want to back up and just reiterate one of the things that I think are important in addition to patience and reading a lot. Confidence is a big one, and you gain confidence the more you write. Once I kind of hit that confidence threshold that I knew that what I was writing about on the topics that I was an expert on, I knew that whatever I was producing would entertain and inform my audience. Once I hit that confidence level, my surroundings began to matter a lot less because it's much easier to just get in the zone, look at the screen, focus on the keys, make it happen if you're confident in what you're doing, because the distractions around you start mattering a lot less and you just get into this flow, into this zone where none of that matters. So I've written blog posts in taxi cabs flying to the airport. I've written on planes in cramped economy seats. All over the place. At the Consumer Electronics Show, if you've ever been, there's bloggers everywhere just camped up against the wall producing amazing stuff that ends up making the world a million times over. And you would never imagine that it was created in some cramped up corner of a convention hall. Now, I will say for ideal conditions, yeah, it's nice to have peace and quiet. It's nice to have an office that's familiar. If you're going to focus on one or two things, get an ergonomic chair. It's amazing what comfort will do. If you're really comfortable when you're writing or creating, you're going to be in a much better mental state to let positivity flow out. If your back's a little uncomfortable, your elbows aren't quite where they need to be, you might not notice it, but subconsciously that discomfort is going to mess with your mojo. So if I had to recommend one thing, I would say invest in ergonomics, invest in comfort.
That's a great, great recommendation. Now, Darren, I want to talk a little bit about the ideal composition of a blog post now. And so, you know, you alluded earlier to the fact that working at Engadget, you have a completely different goal with content, right? Like you're breaking news, you're covering things that are very timely. And so you're often pushing out shorter form content with the goal of, you know, bringing in readers quickly. So shifting a little bit more over to like, let's take your example of someone who's doing a food blog, right? They want to publish recipes. They want to reach readers over the course of weeks, months, years. It's kind of a longer term game. So when you look at content that's say longer form, what is the ideal composition of a blog post for you? Where should people be investing their time when it comes to those kinds of posts?
My recommendation is to always be comfortable with your headline first. It's really difficult for an author to write an 800 page book if they aren't really comfortable with the title of the book. And in a smaller scale, even long form blog posts are the same way. So I would invest a lot of time in what story does the headline and even the subhead tell? And are you really, really comfortable with getting that in a good space? Because that is your guardrail that will help you henceforth. Thousands of words in, your guardrails are still going to be there. The other thing that I coach people on is make sure your opener and your closer are amazing. Because a lot of times you're only going to catch people reading the very beginning or the very end. And if those two aren't really compelling, a lot of people won't stay for what's in between. Attention spans are short. The internet happens fast. If you don't hook people right away and give people something good at the bottom to take away and share, every piece of effort that you put in the middle matters a lot less. So put a lot of focus on that. To some degree, you really want to know how the post ends as it begins. And then you fill out the middle. It's helped. People I've coached have really enjoyed that, with work really hard on the opener, work really hard on the closer, and then the middle kind of writes itself. It just feels good because you know you're going from A to Z.
Do you find that, you know, you personally, when you're writing something that's a little bit longer form, do you find that you write a post like in a sequential order from intro to, you know, middle to conclusion? Or do you find that you kind of jump around, fill things in as they come to you?
I think this is a very personal thing. But for me, what I've noticed is I'll hammer out the headline, and then I will usually figure out what the paragraphs in between will be, what the subheads along the way will be. So for example, if I'm envisioning a post that's going to be broken up into three or four main sections, I first want to hammer out the headlines, the titles of those four sections before I write any content whatsoever. I guess it's drafting an outline. It's, if you were thinking about a book in terms of chapters, I think about a blog post in the same form. What are the chapters within this 4,000 or 5,000 word blog post? What helps there is once I have those, I let my mind tell me what I want to write first. So sometimes I want to write the middle section first. Sometimes I want to write the next to last section first. But as long as I have those section headers in there, I know that I won't forget. I know that it's not going to really harm me going out of order. And it also puts you in a good place where, look, if you only have an hour, you can finish one section. You come back tomorrow and you do the other section. But because you had those headers there, you're not really going to lose your place. You're not going to lose that flow. You can jump right back into it.
Yeah, I really resonate with that personally too. It's something where, you know, taking your example, if there's three or four subsections in an article, maybe when I sit down to write, subsection number three is like very, very like appealing. I just saw something earlier in the day, or I read something that sparked me, just dive straight into that one first instead of, you know, number one.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it's, again, it's a very personal thing. The cool thing about writing is, for the most part, people don't write in real time to their audience. So, you know, it can get a little messy as long as the composition at the end of it is something that makes sense and resonates.
So, Darren, you've had the opportunity to work with some incredible companies over the years. Today, you're a senior strategist and writer at The Points Guy, but you've also worked with brands like Samsung, Dolby, Thrillist, TechRadar, Citibank, the list seriously goes on. So what have you seen to be kind of the most effective traffic driving strategy that's working well today when you just look out across your experience?
To me, it comes down to two things. One is cadence. The other is product market fit. So I'll start with the first, cadence. If you write something, you put something out there that's really good, you try to drum up interest around it, and then you don't write again for a month, you're going to have to re-earn that audience every single time, unless you establish from the get-go that you are doing something on a monthly basis. Maybe it's a monthly newsletter where you tell your audience, look, I'm putting all my effort into this one thing every month. On the second day of every month, it's going to go back out to you. Now that they understand that, you're good. But if you, whatever cadence you're comfortable with, try to establish that early on. Because way too many people, it's just like going to the gym. You're like, oh, day one, you're all on it. Day two, okay, we'll make it out there. Day three, it's just pure willpower. By day four, something else has taken over your mental space and you're just not pushing through. So maybe that was more than you should have jumped into. Maybe you should have just done it weekly and it would be a lot less mentally. So whatever the cadence is for your audience, pick it and stick with it. The other is product market fit, which I don't think it's talked about enough in the editorial space, which is to say, if you were starting a business of any type, whether that's a sewing business, whether that's a brick and mortar business, whether that's a landscaping business, completely differentiated from editorial, the product has to be accepting of whatever you're putting into it. The market has to be ready to accept whatever it is you're building. And the same goes for editorial. If what you're telling the world isn't resonating, it's not solving a particular problem, it's not answering a particular question, or it's not answering a question in a differentiated way, you can't really be upset or surprised if it doesn't take off or it doesn't resonate. A business owner would have the same exact issue. If the 10th landscaper opens up in the same neighborhood, I mean, maybe there's an oversaturation of landscaping. Like, does it really have product market fit? So think about that as best as possible from an editorial standpoint before you really dive in. It's, who is my audience? Is there a product market fit? Is what I'm passionate about, does it have a market on the other side? And if the immediate answer is no, not all hope is lost. When Engadget was born, there were a number of other places you could go to get consumer technology news. But we did it in a way that was very unique. The tone and style is extremely differentiated. Most people, if they're familiar with the landscape of consumer tech pubs, could remove the logos and read a piece from Engadget or any of its rivals, and a lot of people would be able to guess where it came from based on the way it's written. So there are ways to differentiate, even if it's a saturated audience, but you need to think about it at least.
Yeah, no, that's powerful. I know exactly what you mean. So in terms of, let's say, at the points guy, where do you guys see the majority of your traffic come from? What does kind of the distribution look like, thinking of, you know, social, search engines, things like that?
Yeah, this another business analogy here. If the more you can differentiate your revenue sources, the better you are. So the more you can diversify your traffic sources, the less reliant you are on one particular funnel to build that audience. So we see a mixture, like most publications, from social, from things like Pocket and Flipboard, from just Googling. We have a lot of loyal readers that just come to the URL every single day because they want to be invested in what we're doing. And then we have a lot of people that have signed up for email newsletters because they just find email the easiest way to consume news. So it's easier said than done, but the more you can scale where your content is going, the better chance you have at reaching the most people. Now, as an organization, we have the resources to do that. As a one-man show, it's tough. But if you're in that situation, focus on where your audience is mostly, start there, and then feel it out. Email newsletters are coming back, man. People like email. They like getting it in there. They can just quickly read it on their phone. It's not a bad place to start. And there's some pretty awesome services that build templates out for you, so you don't have to be an HTML whiz to figure it out.
Yeah, absolutely. So shifting gears a little bit now on you, one thing that I know you've obviously been very good at over the years is monetizing your writing skills, right? So freelance clients, consulting clients, people that you coach on writing. Do you remember who your very first freelance client was?
So funny enough, Engadget, I freelanced for Engadget before I actually worked full time with them. So technically my Engadget days began as a freelancer. And so I serviced Engadget as a freelancer. And actually, I think I freelanced with them for almost 3 years before turning it into my full-time job. And so this is another lesson in patience where
wow.
Sometimes, I mean, listen, I didn't have a literature degree. I had a business degree and an MBA. On paper, I didn't really have a lot of authority in the editorial space. So I had to prove myself as a writer and a storyteller, started as a freelancer, fell in love with the people, fell in love with the culture, fell in love with the topics, and worked my way up and hung around long enough to where when an opportunity arose to make it my full-time job, I was able to do it. It's you know, you see a lot of people, it just happen into something, but there's usually like quite a bit of backstory and how they worked up into it. So for me, I was a freelancer at Engadget for years before I made it my full-time role. Some of those other clients though, they just came by way of putting myself out there when I was at Engadget. I would cover various topics and then people in those industries would read my work and then they would become familiar with how I covered things or how I saw things and then people would reach out based on that exposure. So it's one of those classic situations of one thing leads to another. So the more you can get yourself out there, the more you can be, the more you can be published and can be a voice on topics, people read, and a lot of people will just reach out based on what they read. I think my earliest freelance client after I came on was Citibank and McKinsey, two really big consulting firms. And they reached out to me because they said, you know, we can tell you've got kind of a no-frills, you're going to tell it like it is attitude in the consumer technology space. We're doing some consulting projects where we really need advice on certain trends in the industry, and we need to know that you're going to tell it like it is because we have big, big clients on the other side making massive investment decisions based on how the trends really are, not what you could paint them to be. So it's those opportunities I didn't actually reach out for. It was just a situation of putting myself out there and being seen and then being in the spot to respond to it.
Yeah, this is kind of like, you know, similar to the advice that I end up giving to a lot of people who are just starting out with freelance writing is that, you know, they often ask like, oh, how do I land my first clients? But then I ask them, where do you have some published writing that you can like point back to and say, this is a sample of my work? And oftentimes people haven't even gotten that far. So create your own work samples if you haven't gotten paid to do them already.
Absolutely. I mean, look, on a, from a creative standpoint, if you're trying to get into the advertising agency, you're going to have a reel. Everyone has a reel. If you want to become an actor or an actress, you got to have a reel. Honestly, the same is true for editorial. People want to see your samples. They want to see how you think, how you write, how you play with words. It matters. And so even if it's just something that starts out as a small personal blog, always understand that whatever you put out there could one day be your resume. So make it count.
All right. Well, Darren, I want to ask you a few of my frequently asked questions now that we're getting close to the end of this interview here. So what would be your number one piece of advice to our people out there today, here today, that want to build a profitable blog of their own? What should they focus on?
I will say building a profitable blog of your own just on content is really tough. It's a really tough business to break into. All of my writing that has been monetized has been done within the construct of another organization. So Engadget, for example. That said, the thing I think you should focus on, if you really want to just break away, make blogging or editorial a cornerstone of your livelihood, is make the medium that you're using a jumping off point to other services that you offer. So what I mean by that is Tynan, the example that I gave earlier, he recognized that over the course of that daily blogging operation, he picked up a lot of people that were just along for the ride because it was kind of crazy what he was doing. And in doing so, you kind of run out of entertaining things to write. So he started getting pretty introspective and some pretty amazing topics came out of that. So then he had some inbound interest from people saying, like, I really like what you're doing for your personal productivity. I noticed that you kind of go against the grain. You use Linux on your laptop. You just do some kind of funky things. He lived in an RV for a long time with like a really concentrated space that would help him focus on the work that he was in. Some unusual things, but he was open and vulnerable talking about it. Some people began to reach out to him and say, I think I could use some of what you've got. And thus a coaching business was born. So then he started using his blog to talk about what he could offer from a coaching standpoint. And he began to get one coaching client and another coaching client and another coaching client. And at the end of it, he was getting so many inbounds that from a work-life balance, he actually had to put a halt to it. And then he launched an annual coaching conference. So it was kind of a two-day event where people that maybe didn't get in early enough to get his one-on-one services, they could all come to Las Vegas. They all gathered together like minds. And he put on this workshop, essentially, that he then monetized. So he hasn't made a dime from the actual blog content, but it has allowed him to monetize his coaching services, his mentoring services, and his event services. So don't think about blogging as the words themselves have to sell, because you're forcing yourself into a really narrow niche. If you use the blog as a jumping off point to other things you offer, that's where the real magic can happen.
And I think, you know, what you mentioned here also important to highlight is that you don't have to necessarily know where that magic's going to come from, right? You have to be open to the opportunities and listen to the people that actually come to your blog too.
Absolutely. When he got into daily blogging, he did not set out to be a life coach or a productivity coach. But because that's what he was passionate about, those are the words that emanated from him on a daily basis. And what he ended up writing about more than anything else was minimalism and hyper-productivity. And then he built an audience slowly, but he built an audience that were interested in that. And you got to think, even now, I bet if you looked at his traffic figures, they aren't in the millions. He doesn't have millions of people coming. But the thing is, he has enough people coming that would sign up for his services and enough people to monetize his life. So don't get hung up in quantity. It's really about the quality of the visits. Are you having the right people visit? And do those people want to engage with you? Because truthfully, if he could only manage 20 one-on-one clients a year, all he needs are the right 20 people to show up at his blog. Millions of views aren't going to do him any good. He needs the right 20 people to show up. And I think there's a lot to be learned from that, from people that are just getting started.
Yeah, I think that's the best advice. Optimize for the right people.
Absolutely.
Darren, what kinds of sacrifices have you had to make over the years in order to put enough time and effort into growing your business?
Yeah, time is a big one, man. I mean, like, there's no way to sugarcoat it. Every hour you spend poring over a piece of content that you're going to publish is an hour that you could spend on your bike. It's an hour you could spend climbing up a mountain. It's an hour you could spend working for the man. You can do anything with that hour. But if you choose to invest in building your content and building your brand, it becomes a sacrifice, just because by its very nature, building anything just is. And I'll say, for me, it really helped to have an amazing support system. If you have a partner or a spouse that'll support you and they are bought into your mission and they're willing to work around some of those long nights and long hours, but then celebrate with you in a different way, it really helps. It really, really does. And I was fortunate to have a lot of mentors and a wider network of editorial people that I respected in the editorial industry that were in similar boats as me. And we kind of created our own network and our own group to bounce ideas off of, to proofread each other's work, to make each other better. The bigger network you can build from that perspective, the better. If you go in it alone, it can get lonely.
I'm so glad you mentioned too, you know, getting buy-in from the other people who are stakeholders in your life. Yeah. Essentially, like, that is so important. Otherwise, you're going to feel guilty when you're up on your computer late at night, early in the morning. It's just not, it's not sustainable.
It's huge. And those people also can, they don't just necessarily have to be cheerleaders, all blind cheerleaders all the time. Treat them as accountability partners. If your balance gets too far out of whack, if you have people close enough to you, they'll tell you. And you have to be willing to listen to them and say, okay, how can we work it out to make it better? Because burnout is not a recipe for success. You may hear some stories of, you know, I built a $1 million business because I didn't sleep for 8 years. Yeah, but I mean, how many relationships did you torch along the way? And what's the long-term pains that you're going to feel from a health perspective? You just got to consider there's balance to be had. And use those people, those support people in your life as accountability partners just as much as supporters.
All right, Darren, this is my last question for you. What's been the best investment you feel you've ever made in the context of growing your business? So this could be in the form of time, money, tools, products, services, education, or otherwise.
Okay, so I'm going to go slightly offbeat with the answer here, but I actually mean it. The best investment has been relationships. And so here's what I mean by that. You can spend money on a product, but eventually that product is going to age out. You can spend money on software. It's going to change. Maybe it changes for the worse. You really can't invest enough in relationships, and you just can't. Everything that you put into it ends up coming back tenfold. And when I said network is so important, this is what I mean. The relationships you have with people that are in the same boat as you. So for me, people that I respected in the editorial space, people that I thought were amazing writers, amazing storytellers, amazing people at their craft, building the relationship with them and maintaining it, having coffee with them, making time for FaceTime with them, just catching up about life and their kids. These will pay off years and years and years down the road. I haven't worked at Engadget for years, but the relationships and the bonds I built there continue to pay off now. I mean, look, Hurricane Florence just stormed through my neck of the woods, and I had dozens of people reaching out from my Engadget days. They're like, look, man, anything I can do to help you, let me know. Those are the things that are really hard to quantify, but they matter a lot. And practically speaking, those people are going to be there when you're drained and you just need somebody to give you the real deal on what a piece of content. Like, listen, I just need you to edit this thing for me. I need you to give me your honest opinion. I need this to get better. Will you help me out? People are going to do that. Software isn't going to do that. You can't really throw enough money at that problem to do that. It's the trust in your network. So if you're going to invest in one thing, it's people. Meet people that are in the same boat as you, that are doing the same thing as you, that are like-minded. They're great for feedback. They're great for just energy and morale. People, man. It's definitely about the people.
Yeah. Relationships are king. All right, Darren, we're going to let you go. But Darren, you have books, you have courses, you've written a lot about blogging. So can you tell everyone watching, listening, where they can go learn more about you and everything that you're up to?
Absolutely. Yeah. So Amazon.com, you'll find my book, Living the Remote Dream, has tips and tricks, productivity hacks, all of that. Creative Live, I have two courses there. Just search for my name, Darren Murph. You can find me on Twitter at Darren Murph and Instagram at Darren_Murph.
Beautiful. All right. Well, thank you again for joining us.
Absolutely. Thanks for the invite. Take care.
If you enjoyed this episode of the Side Hustle Project, I would love your support. Head on over to the Apple Podcasts app and give us a rating. And as always, you can catch every episode of the Side Hustle Project on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for tuning in.